Hi, this is Donna with the Waldorf Connection, and welcome to Class 1 of the Waldorf Homeschool U. And this first class, we're going to really just get down to the basics and talk about Rudolf Steiner, who he is, and how Waldorf education got started. And we're going to delve into a little bit about how anthroposophy relates to homeschooling. We'll also talk about the 12 senses and the bodies and all that great stuff. And you will have a handout, too, that goes with this that has everything listed. So like a transcript, like a PDF workbook you can look through, and that might be handy to reference back. So let's get started. I'm going to go ahead and just kind of ramble on here for a little while, and don't forget to ask questions on the webpage if you have any questions about what I'm saying and want me to talk a little bit further. I'm going to try. We've got so much to cover, so I'm going to try to just get through the basics and just know there's a resource list at the end of this PDF workbook, and I will also be listing this on the website so that you can have these resources to do further reading and, you know, if you really want to get in a lot more, because there is so much to read about Rudolf Steiner and about Waldorf. It's just certainly nothing we could cover during this first module, but I'll try to get the basics for you so that you can understand. But there is plenty more out there to read all about him, and there's plenty of lectures, and a lot of that is all online where you can access all that stuff for free, and I gave you the links there. So, all right, so let's just start here with Rudolf Steiner and Waldorf education. So the first Waldorf school began in 1919 in Stuttgart, Germany, and it was created for the Waldorf Astoria Company as a new kind of education for children of the factory workers. Now, this method of education is about creating a balance, and this kind of education caused the Nazis to close the schools in the 1930s because it was really based on individuals and creating individuals and independent thinkers, which of course didn't really match up at the time. But luckily, there were schools in Holland and the U.S. that had already been established, so Steiner's method was not lost during that wartime. And really, the first Waldorf school was very revolutionary for its time. It was open to children from all social, religious, racial, and economic backgrounds. And by 1928, it had grown to become the largest non-denominational school in Germany, serving as a model for other Waldorf schools in Germany, Switzerland, Holland, England, and the United States. Waldorf education was created to meet the child and to nourish the child's body, mind, and spirit. And it's very linked to the developmental stages that a child goes through. Rudolf Steiner believed there were three different periods of a child's life, and they are divided up into seven-year cycles, 0 to 7, 7 to 14, and 14 to 21. The 0 to 7 is really considered early childhood. And obviously there's a really vast span there of change that goes on. But academics are not to be offered to the child until after the change of teeth. That's the losing of the baby teeth or the milk teeth. And there's really a lot of theory behind that. And, we'll get into that a little bit. I'm just going to kind of go through sort of a little history here. During the early years, the forces of the child are used to create balance and movement, and they are working on strengthening their limbs and just working in their body. This really leads into understanding the basic concepts of the Waldorf. There are a lot of little things along the way here, lots of ideas and lots of whys. But the whys behind we do the certain things. But basically, it really comes down to where your child is during their development and why you should do it. That's really when you get just down to the nitty-gritty of it. The things that Rudolf Steiner says to do and things to bring to your child at certain times is based on the development of your child. Okay. Hi, this is Donna with the Waldorf Connection, and I want to welcome you to Class 1 of the Waldorf Homeschool U course, and we will be going through six different modules. This is the first module. And if you haven't already had a chance to listen or watch the welcome video, go ahead and do that because it has all the information there on where to ask questions and a little housekeeping notes and everything. All the information is contained in that. So also I will let you know that there is a PDF version of this talk. It's not a transcript, but it's a basic PDF version of what I'm going over here. So if you just want to read through that instead or just have that printed out to use later on for your notes or to reference back, you can go ahead and do that. So really in this first class, we're going to just talk a little bit about the basics of Waldorf. There's so much here that we could spend, weeks talking about it. So I can't do everything in this first module, but I'm going to give you just sort of the basics and, just kind of a little bit about how Waldorf got started, just a brief history on Rudolf Steiner. There's so much online you could learn and delve into there, so I'm not going to do a lot of that because I really want to get into, how this all relates back to homeschooling instead of just a history about Waldorf, but we'll just go a little bit into that. And you can, like I said, you can find a lot of this online. I will be giving resources at the end of the PDF worksheets that has all kinds of lectures and things you can go online and read that are free, more about Rudolf Steiner and Waldorf, and I'll also have these on the website for you under the resource section. Okay, so Rudolf Steiner was an Austrian philosopher and teacher, and he did so much, not just kind of creating Waldorf education, but he did the biodynamic farming, and he did stuff with arts, and there were so many things. He was very spiritual and was sort of this kind of ahead of his time in a lot of the things that he did. And there are many different avenues that you could, really read, and they have even audios you can listen to online and listen to his lectures. He talks about many different subjects. Including architecture, drama, science, education, agriculture, medicine, economics, religion, care for the dying, social organization, and many other things. But, of course, we're here talking about Waldorf. So let's just kind of go into that. So the first Waldorf school began in 1919 in Stuttgart, Germany, and it was created for the Waldorf Astoria Company as a new kind of education for the children of the factory workers. Unfortunately, the Nazis closed the schools in the 1930s because this method of education really was to foster creative and independent thinkers, which certainly didn't match up with what was going on there at the time. But luckily, the schools in Holland and the U.S. had already been established, so Steiner's method was not lost during the wartime years. And really, the Waldorf School was very revolutionary for its time, just as Rudolf Steiner's, forward thinking and a lot of the things that he was talking about at the time. And I've heard to say that really it's sort of caught up now. Like what he put out to the world is now, there is science that has caught up to what he said, and it's all kind of coming true, if you will. But now we have a way to prove it, 100 years later. What he was saying, he was so far advanced. So there, like I said, there's a lot you can look at and check out about Rudolf Steiner. There's a lot of his lectures out there. But basically, the school was open to children from all social, religious, racial, and economic backgrounds. And by 1928, it had grown to be the largest non-denominational school in Germany, serving as a model for the other Waldorf schools, which were in Switzerland, Holland, England, and the United States. So Waldorf education was created to meet the child and to nourish the child's body, mind, and spirit. And basically it's linked to the developmental stages a child goes through. And Rudolf Steiner believed there were three periods of a child's life called the seven-year cycles. And we'll be talking a little bit about that in just a second. I'm just kind of going through an overview. Let's see here. Basically, in a nutshell, the reasons behind Waldorf and what we do is all to meet the child where they are developmentally. So by you understanding where your child is developmentally, will really help as far as why you do things at certain ages and at certain stages in Waldorf. So we're going to kind of get into that here, and that is the relating anthroposophy to homeschooling. So Waldorf is a living, breathing form of education. It requires you to be constantly observing your child. And that really is something that you may or may not have really thought about doing. You may be there playing with your child. You may be, even teaching your child, or just, throughout the day, they're there, and you're kind of going through the day. But are you really observing and kind of seeing, where your child is? What are they actually doing? How are they actually doing it? And that will really come into play, especially when you start to get into the grades and actually doing the homeschooling, to kind of see where they are, what are they struggling with, what do they need right now. And it is really about that. It gives you the opportunity to be in the present moment and bring your child exactly what they need during that moment. It's a really big part of this. So Steiner wanted to provide an antidote to modern times and materialistic thinking. Waldorf really honors the whole child, body, mind, and spirit, through arts, music, handwork, sculpture, movement. It educates the child's mind, nourishes their soul, and meets their spirit at developmentally appropriate stages. Waldorf honors the child by allowing them to have true childhood through being out in nature and playing, and it protects childhood and simplicity through fostering these relationships with the seasons and nature and festivals. And by waiting to teach academics until the child has completed their job of mastering movement and their bodies. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. As a parent that is planning to homeschool and use the Waldorf method, it's very important to understand these reasons so that you're not constantly saying, well, why do we have to wait until first grade to do the child, until the child turns 7 before we begin teaching the letters, or just so you'll have this understanding, and also so that you have this understanding when questions come up to you by family members or friends, because I know that one of the biggest things, and we will get into that, is about, I don't want to say delayed academics because I don't even like that term, but just waiting until the child is developmentally ready. So a lot of questioning could come into why are they not learning to read until they're in the first grade, because it's very different than what is going on in like a public school or the regular school system. And so having that information and understanding it and believing it is a big part of that homeschooling and a big part of Waldorf during those earlier years. Okay, so there is no manual. However, there are things that Rudolf Steiner recommends and that the Waldorf schools have created over the years as sort of a guideline curriculum. And you can find this online. In fact, I may try to put that into our thing. It just has the listing of what you do in each grade. First grade, we covered this, and second grade, you can cover this. There's no absolutes here either. It can change, and I know it does change from Waldorf school to Waldorf school, even, because I have talked to different teachers, and there are some basic ideas, but it could be moved around, and that's the joy of homeschooling as well, is that you can, if you think your child is not ready for something, or you'd rather do it next year or group it, whatever, there's no hard and fast rules. Example, like first grade usually is about teaching the fairy tales. We teach the 4 math processes. We do nature stories. We talk about the quality of numbers. We teach recorder and knitting. So those are kind of the main things that go on in first grade. So again, it's very helpful if you understand the reasons why that we're doing these things, and we are going to get into some of this, and I hope that you guys will ask questions on our forum comments so that I can kind of get more individualized into the questions that you have there. Knowing the reasons why will really make it a lot easier, and it'll allow you to relax and not feel like you are missing something, like, oh, I just feel like we're not doing enough, or I feel like I'm doing too much and I'm rushing or I'm trying to push. Because there is a whole different feeling, to homeschooling. And, you'll know you're on the right track where your child needs to be. So let's just kind of get into the 12 senses and the kind of meeting in the child's development And you may or may not have heard this, but Rudolf Steiner believed there was 12 senses, and I'm sure many of us had grown up thinking there was 5 senses. but looking online for the 12 senses, you can find a lot these days and a lot of scientific discoveries and things, not just Rudolf Steiner, but now there's a lot more that are sort of jumped on board, that there is so much more there. So I encourage you to expand if that feels like something that would be right for you to, kind of delve into. But I'm just going to kind of go kind of an overview here. And there's a quote I put in here, not really a quote, but a little line I'd like to say that I have in our the worksheet. And that's, with Waldorf homeschooling, we are looking at the human being in a different way. And to kind of keep that in your mind, because really that is kind of what we're doing. We are looking at things in a totally different way. The schooling is done in a different way, and everything is a little bit outside the box. But that being said, it's very natural feeling once you kind of get into it and you kind of think, wow, like it just, you know, it's not that it just comes naturally, but it starts to feel like this is the right thing, and it's hard to believe that it's done a different way once you really get into it. All right, so let's talk about the 12 senses here. So Steiner defined 12 senses that are broken into 3 different groups. And there's a lot of stuff about this, like I was saying. These are the sense of knowledge, the sense of feeling, and the sense of ego. But I'm going to kind of go through these because I hear this more about the lower senses, the middle senses, and the upper senses. And basically, there's a lot to this. The lower senses are usually what you're born with, sort of that 0 to 7, what the early childhood, the young child kind of comes into the world with and starts to have, and then the middle senses starts to kick in, you know, as they get into that next 7-year cycle, and then the upper senses. So let's just go through these again. You have this in a PDF that you can print out to look at. The sense of touch, of course, you know, some of these are going to be familiar to you, and I don't have to go into a lot of it about that, but basically it's contact through the organ of the skin, and that includes what's inside as well as what's outside, and that having a tactile experience is the best, meaning hugs and being held and caressing, touching, versus through artificial means like TV or media, books, and that kind of thing. You want your child to touch things. You want them to get their hands in the dirt and get dirty and touch things and play and feel and experience all of that, so they can feel what different things like. And I'm sure you've seen those sensory books. This is like sandpaper and something fluffy and soft and all of that, but that's really what a young child is doing, right? They're going around and they're, discovering how things feel, and that, and they're kind of fostering that sense of touch. Okay, the sense of life or the sense of well-being, and that's the way that our body is working and how it connects with the rhythm of the world around us, and that is able to determine how we're, if we're hungry, if we're thirsty, if we're tired, if we're cold, and if we're hot, like how your body is feeling and how we are feeling. Really the best way to boost this is to provide your child with a rhythm to help support them while this sense is developing. And that's why, well, that's not why, that's one of the reasons why having a good solid rhythm is really important, especially in those early years. And we'll be getting into that next week on our next module. The third one is the sense of self-movement. So that's knowing that you're moving, and everything in the sense of movement. Like, it's just the effect of moving. So childhood games are good, hopping, where they start and stop, start and stop. They can tell when something's moving and then it's stopping. So clapping games and hopping and things like that, movement games can really help affect that sense. The sense of balance. And that's the physical balance as well as the balance in life or being centered. So Steiner says, look at the sense of balance. We acquire this sense only gradually in life. We don't just think about it because it also remains in the night of consciousness. So, you know, we're thinking about how we can balance on one foot or just being able to walk. You know, think of a child who's just learning to walk and learning that sense of balance. You know, riding a bike and balancing themselves, you know, and kind of getting that equilibrium or whatever, and then also being balanced in their lives and kind of feeling centered and balanced. And I'm sure that that is an ongoing thing that we all strive for, right, is to kind of have that balance. Okay, now we're going to move on to the middle senses. And I had a note here that these cannot be filtered during the early years, so really watch out for sensory overload. So your younger child will be having a hard time if there's too much of these senses. And the first one is the sense of smell, which is interesting. And this relates to the memory. And again, a note here to protect this sense for the first 7 years. Too many smells, especially artificial smells, like, you know, air fresheners and those candles and things like that. If there is some smells, you know, it needs to be something that's natural, nothing that's too overloading with smells everywhere. And interestingly, you know, your memory, and probably we'll talk a little bit about this when we get into the next section, but if you think when your memories of your in your own life began, of course we all have some memories, or maybe you do. I have some memories of, you know, maybe when I was 5 or 6, but I can't remember much, you know, really before I was 7 or 8 years old. And it's so interesting how it says the sense of smell is related to memory. Okay, so the next one is the sense of taste. And this is not only just tasting things physically, but also emotionally knowing experiences, like that was a sour experience or a sweet experience, and kind of relating that, of course, sense of taste with foods and drinks and things. And, you know, I don't have to say a whole lot about that. I think you guys got that one. And the next one is the sense of sight, which is our vision and the ability to distinguish color and form. And really studying something deeply. So instead of just looking through, you know, looking at a lot of different things, but really looking at one thing deeply. And that is sort of that ability to distinguish form and, of course, seeing everything in the different colors. The last one in this middle senses is the sense of warmth. So I want to talk about these ones we may not be as familiar with. And this is a really important one. It says this sense does not fully develop until age 9, our sense of temperature of things and our inner warmth. So, and that means like nurturing and joy and love and just feeling that sense of warmth. And again, rhythm, I think, really comes into this because it's feeling that you're not protected, but sort of just, you know, in a happy, you know, just kind of picture like a happy home where you're, you know, kind of cuddled by the fire and you're feeling warm, not only that the warm fire is going, but that you're just feeling loved and nurtured and cherished and, you know, that whole inner warmth. Okay, now the upper three senses, the upper senses is developed during adolescence. Or that's totally, not that they don't, you don't have these other senses, but I guess it's totally developed, you know, where you're kind of saying, okay, my senses is developed. And for the first one is hearing. And that just means, of course, you know what hearing is, hearing vibrations of sound through the ear. So the sense of hearing, I guess, doesn't reach its peak or whatever until this time. The sense of speech or the sense of the word. And this is interesting. When I was looking through this, it means another person, not yourself. And what this means is to really hear what someone is saying, the meaning behind their words. And I'm sure if you've ever had a conversation with a child or someone else, and that you say, how are you doing? And they're like, fine. They're saying fine, but you know for a fact that they're not fine, right? So it's to be able to distinguish that something else is happening or that they're telling you something, but there's a whole different meaning behind their words. I thought that was a really interesting one to bring in here. Then the sense of thought, which is really thinking through things and realizing ideas, like really concentrating and coming up with something. Not that you can't, of course, do this in the younger years, but to really have those thoughts and to process that. The last one is the sense of ego or the individuality, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. And it's the who am I and what is my place in this world. and our experience as an individual and how that can bring us back into oneness with everyone else. And we'll see that that is much later on, closer to age 21, as we get into the next section. So that's just food for thought there about the senses. And I remember when I first heard of this, it was like, wow, I had no idea. I'd never heard anything like this. And it's not that you have to, like, study these or anything, but I think it's just to kind of have in the back of your mind and to understand a little bit more into depth about Waldorf and what it's based on and what are some of the things that Rudolf Steiner, you know, brings into Waldorf and why they do the things they do. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the bodies and the aspects of the soul. And you may have heard some of this and you may not. And it is kind of confusing, so I tried to really break this out. And if you can get your sheets and if you want to print them out while you listen to this, that's even good too. Because even though I've heard it many times, it was like I had to kind of put it all down here where I could understand. So we're going to talk about the threefold aspect of the soul. And you may have heard this as head, heart, and hands. If you've come to Waldorf and you've heard that term before, those are the three soul activities. And so I've broken this down here by three different sections. Again, it's these 3 7-year cycles that we're dealing with between the ages of 0 and 21. And they're divided up, and you may have heard several different things. And so I've grouped everything together here so you could really see. So let's talk about the first 7-year cycle. And that is the 0 to 7, and that would be considered hands. This is the willing. This is the willing part. The child is in a sleeping state of consciousness, and they're learning through movement. It's about being in motion. It's about doing. Not much of memory, because the memory just starts at around age 3 and 4. So the child is in that sleepy state. And if, again, as I was just saying before, not many of us can remember many things when we were that young. And we saw the world in a whole different way than what we, you know, as what we do now as adults, of course. But I can see it so interestingly in my children that it's not that they just don't have a clue what's happening around them, but it's just they're in a totally different state. They just don't realize that things are happening. And I encourage you guys to really get into this if you want to, because it's really interesting. And I gave a couple of resources at the end. The Child's Changing Consciousness is one by Rudolf Steiner, Kingdom of Childhood. A lot of those really will go into this a lot more. And I have a couple bonus audios for you as well to listen to that will really go into this in a lot more depth. So just so you kind of know kind of what this is the early childhood. This is the time where we're protecting our child and they're you know, they're living through their will and through their movements, and that is really what their job is at this time, is to play and to run around and to, you know, experience things physically, you know, while they're working on their body. And, you know, if you think about the changes that the child goes through during those early years where they're just, you know, they're babies, they can barely move, and they crawl, and then they're walking, and then they're running. I mean, it's all about mastering their body and making their body do what they want to do, jumping and skipping and clapping and climbing trees and all those, riding bikes and all that stuff. So that's all, you know, kind of going on during this 7-year cycle. The next one is the feeling, and this is the heart. It's age 7 to 14, and it's a dreaming state of consciousness. So they've awoken a little, but they're still not fully awake. They're still sort of in that dreamy state. You know, maybe that state you're in kind of halfway in between, right, where you're not quite asleep, but you're not really fully awake. It's sort of that in-between age. And they learn through pictures and images and feelings and stories to connect to their heart and their soul. They're learning through polarities, opposites, slow, fast, hot, cold, up, down, and through the arts, through beauty and music, things that touch their heart and their feelings. It's all about feelings and learning to express themselves and the emotions. And that's kind of where my children are right now. It's a lot about feeling. Not that they still won't run around and do the things that they will do, but that they it's moved to a different state. And I can tell it's interesting because I've heard my children so many different times. It's like they come to this realization, like, oh, I never realized. It's like the light bulb kind of goes on in their heads, and things that have been right there in front of them all this time that they just were not able to see, they can now see. It's, and I'm sure that it will go again when we move on to the next, 7-year cycle. It's like they just aren't able to see that stuff that's right there, and now they can, and now they start to, start to process things in a different way. And this is where academics and things start coming in, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Okay, the next aspect of soul is the thinking. And again, that's the head, of course. You know, you start to get into the intellectual, and that's an awake state of consciousness around age 14 to 21. So now they're learning through intellect. They're not reacting as quickly and as much, but they're thinking before they do. And, you know, going back to the other ones, those younger children, sometimes they just do. They can't stop themselves from, doing the thing, even though they know that that might not be right. They don't have the capacity to really stop themselves from doing things. And now they're getting into this where they're really thinking before doing. They're having more common sense and rational thoughts, and they can really get into more of an intellectual state. And I'm sure that all of the consciousness, again, will be raised, and they will be more awake, and they'll see more of what's really happening or what we see, as adults. They'll be up a notch there and really just more aware. So I hope that helps a little bit with that. Please ask more questions if you want about the head, heart, and hands. And I kind of tried to put it all together there so that you would understand. Now, those are the threefold aspects of the soul, or also the 7-year cycles you may have heard about. Okay, now we're going to move on to the 4 bodies. And this is something else. But it all is very related. As we go back here, just like the senses and everything, it's all related, but it's just kind of the way things are divided up, and so you can sort of understand it. I tried to make it pretty simple here so that you could really grasp what we're saying. Okay, so the 4 bodies of the human, and this is what Rudolf Steiner said, there were 4 bodies, and I went ahead and also kind of put an age over here so you could understand when these bodies kind of come in place. So when a baby is born, or when a child is born, of course they're born with a physical body, and this is kind of ages 0 to 6, and it relates to the mineral elements. And this is your actual physical body, inside your skin, your mass, I'm tapping my arm. This is your body. It has the element of the earth, and what came to me was this ashes to ashes, dust to dust thing. You come in with your body and you leave with your body, but of course we know there's much more there, but we're talking right here about a physical body. And then around age seven, the etheric body is born, which relates to a plant. It's also called the life body, and it's your energy. It's your life force, if that makes sense, because I know some of this is very foreign, and you have to hear this a few times and really get into this before you totally understand it. I'm just trying to kind of give it to you in an elementary version. So it's your life force. It's kind of what, makes you. And, around age 2 or 3, usually the child will start to discover and he'll start to say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. Sometimes before that, they won't say anything, or they'll say, Donna's going to do this. I don't know if you have young children have said that. But suddenly around 3, they discover the I. It's the beginning of the very beginnings of their memory. And the child during this time is mastering their physical body and its ability to move around in space. So, just kind of what we were talking about before around that age. Of the 7. Then at age 14, the astral body, which relates to animal, is born. And that is your consciousness, the independence of thinking. again, what we said before, the thinking, the awake stage, and having their own perception and ideas and thoughts and decisions, making your own decisions about ways of behaving. So again, it's just kind of going back to what we said in the last thing about those 7-year cycles. At 21, the fourth body is born, and that's the ego. And this is not the, boy, he has a really big ego. This is the, it's the I. And there's so much, again, more you can read into this. But so basically what I was reading here, it says when your home has finally been built, the physical body, the etheric body, and the astral body has all been, worked and you've been mastering all of that and have really built that part, then the I comes in to take on the consciousness of the individual. It's like a spiritual connection of why you are here. And there's a lot to this I, and really being here, what your purpose is and all of that. And that is born around age 21. All right. One more thing about this before we kind of get into a little bit more homeschooling, and that's the transitions of a child. And you may hear these three times in the child's life, especially in the Waldorf realms, we've heard it. Age 3 is sort of that birth of memory and the I have my own life, which we discussed. And then there's the 9-year change around age 9, where you get that stronger spark of feeling and you start to feel separated and realize you are your own person and you start to feel a little bit more separate from the world. You start breaking away a little bit from that childhood and from the fairy tales and fairy kind of land and start to edge on a little bit more. And then age 12, like a 12-year change, where you're really out of the child, out of the heart of childhood and beginning the intellect and kind of getting into that pre-adolescence. And those are three kind of transitional times in a child's life where things do kind of change quite drastically, or there's a period there where they go through change. And we can certainly talk more about that. I've just gone through the 9-year change with twins, so I can certainly talk about that if anybody has questions about that. But you also hear a little bit sometimes about that 7-year where the change of teeth, but I think that's a little bit more of a physical thing. And these are a little bit more of just the consciousness changing about these transitions of child. All right. Moving on a little bit more. So what I thought we would talk about here a little bit are some of the understandings behind the method. And, of course, there are so many of these that I could sit here for, like, days doing it. But I wanted to get some of the bigger ones. And then we can talk about more on the website here if people have other things that they're curious about. And one of the biggest things is the waiting for academics. And so I want to go ahead and talk about that now. And I talked about it a little bit before. But really, Steiner felt that academics should not be taught until the change of teeth. So, a child is born with their set of teeth, but once the milk teeth fall out or begin to fall out, really, it's not, you don't have to wait till they're all falling out. When they start to fall out, now you start to create something of your own, something that you have created the child has created, from this place that they are now, their permanent teeth. They've become more of a grown-up human now, and they're on that path. There are many indications, when should you start academics? And I think it depends a lot on the child, and I gave a link in this in the PDF that you can go over and look at. There's a whole page full, is your child ready kind of a thing, and it lists all kinds of physical things on there. Seven springs is one indication your child is ready, that they've lost their teeth or begun to lose their teeth, hopping on one foot, reaching your hand over your head, and touching your opposite ear, which means that their arms are long enough. And if you think about it here, what we're trying to make sure is that the child's physical body is ready, that they've had enough time to master the physical body, that they've had enough time for running and jumping and skipping and doing all those things they need to do before moving up into their head and starting to do academics and learning and reading and thinking. It's about moving at this age. And you know, it's been said that if a child learns to read too early, that they can never get back, like those lost years where they weren't able to finish whatever they need to do in their physical body. But academics can always be learned, you know, can always be taught, and reading can always be taught. So you can check that link out there. I know there's a lot of discussion about this, and people have their own, you know, thoughts about when to start the academics and when to start first grade. I'd be happy to have a conversation about this. And just to give you a little background, as you, if you may not know, I have twins, and one of my girls started losing her teeth almost a whole year before the other. And we started, because they have October birthdays, we started first grade when they were just about to turn 7. And they would have also been in the same grade because of their birthday in a public school, just to kind of give the foundation here. However, when we went through first grade and learned letters and everything, the one who had lost the teeth was reading and was very interested in everything we were doing. And my other daughter, who had really not lost any teeth, or maybe just one, I don't think she'd lost any, had no desire to learn to read whatsoever. And interestingly enough, between the summer between first and second grade, her teeth started falling out, and then she started you know, wanting to learn to read. And for a while I was a little worried, because she really was about 6 months or more, I don't want to say behind, but kind of behind my other girl. And I wasn't like pushing. I just thought, you know, I'm going to let it go. I'm sure it's all going to work out. And I'm so glad I did, because she is the most voracious reader. Like, I think she must be reading on a fifth or sixth grade level at least, maybe more. And she's in the fourth grade. Her reading is amazing. She's reading 500 and 600 page books, and she absolutely loves to read. So, you know, I think I have a little bit of that, gone a little farther in the grades, and can kind of look back and to try to help you to be patient and to wait, because I had that issue. Should I do a second year of kindergarten? Maybe we should start first grade now. What are they going to do? They're going to be so bored. But I'm so glad I waited, because I mean, one of them was barely even ready to do it when I was doing it, and she was 7. And the other one was just at the perfect time. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, to start reading in these early years. And you can look online and start looking at some of the studies that are coming out now about that, and about how children are burned out by the time they're in third and fourth grade now, because it was kind of shoved at them so early, learning their letters at age 3 and 4 and learning to read in kindergarten and earlier, that it spoils it almost, because they're just not ready. So we can talk more about this if you'd like. I just want to give sort of a background and about me and kind of what happened for me, because I think it's interesting that I had two exactly the same age, yet not exactly at the same developmental stages. So you have to look at your own child and see where they are. And, you know, sometimes you just have to go with what feels right. Again, it's this observation. You need to look at your child and say, you know, what feels right. And the other thing about homeschooling that you might not consider is that you don't have to wait an entire year, because if you think they're almost ready, but they're not quite, you don't want to start first grade in September if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. You can start in January. You know, you can start anytime, because that's the beauty of homeschooling, is that gives you the opportunity to be very flexible, or to do a light first grade and then get into it a little bit more or whatever. You can gauge. And we'll talk more about that when we get along into our course. Okay. Let's see here. There's some more grade development ideas here, why we do what we do. And I can't go through everything because, like I said, it could be here forever. I just have a couple things here. Example, knitting in first grade. Steiner felt that knitting was one of the first things the children should learn in handwork. And he felt that thinking was cosmic knitting. So because when you're knitting, you know, you're just making loops, right? You're taking loops, and then you're making more loops, and you're pulling through loops and loops and loops. And the more you pull through the loops, then suddenly you've got a little fabric or you've got a little piece of something that's all knitted together. And basically, that is kind of what's happening with your child at this time. They're starting to formulate concepts, and these random thoughts in their head, they're starting to be able to put them together. And that's kind of where they are in the first grade. Second grade, you've got crocheting. And your child at this age may not have even determined if he's left-handed or right-handed yet. I know I had one that was totally right-handed, and then I have one that went back and forth and back and forth. But when you start to crochet, you've got to hold it in one of their hands. So they can start to say, okay, well, you've just got to choose one, you know. So it really comes, down to something like that. This is my, is it my right? Is it my left? You know, it kind of pushes forward deciding that. Second grade children are testing. There's sort of this right and wrong, I should do this, and now, but I don't have to do this. You start to feel that tug. Where they start to say, hey, I don't have to actually listen to what's going on here. And it meets them with the curriculum of fables where they're learning lessons, you know, through this, the animals in the stories of the fables. You know, there's this whole learning thing and the consequences in each of those fables, and the legends and saint stories kind of fit right in there perfectly. And that's what I mean by when we're meeting the child where they are developmentally with the curriculum, with the literature, with the handwork, with the art and everything, and the math, all at developmentally appropriate ages and stages. Third grade introduces the Old Testament, where they start to see the consequences for not listening. And that really meets their nine-year change head on. And we just went through this last year where they're starting to say, hey, you know, they really go through this kind of a little bit of rebellious phase of the nine-year change. And I saw all kinds of different things here in my own household, depending on temperaments of your child. And we can talk a little bit about temperaments later on. But again, that the stories meet them where they need, and you may have heard the word pedagogical stories. These aren't really pedagogical stories, but they do meet them and feed them without actually saying, now, if you do this, you're going to have the consequences. Instead, they're hearing stories about other people who are going through not the exact same situations, of course, but maybe something similar or going through trials, and they're kind of discovering what happens. Fourth grade brings the Norse myth, which is what we're discussing doing. It's a time for opening their eyes a bit more into the realities of the world, and this adventure and balance that's shown through these stories is really where the 10-year-old will be. Also, we start to get into local geography, where we are starting at home with mapping and local right in our town, and then moving out to state. Again, it's that there's a bigger world out there, and they're slowly kind of seeing that as they go through the grade. And then fifth grade is on to Greek myths and study of ancient civilizations. So they've kind of crossed that bridge out of the heart of childhood, and they're moving into adolescence and getting into more, serious literature and things. And again, I'm not going to go through all this because there's so much, but we can talk about specifics if you guys have questions. Okay, why the in-breath and the out-breath? And you may have heard this, kind of to balance your day, to have this in and out-breath. And basically, again, it's about the polarities and about balance, and it goes back to rhythm. It all kind of, that's what I love about Waldorf, it's all weaved together. Even if we look at individual pieces here of this puzzle, it all fits together and weaves itself over and over, throughout your learning. Whether it's the harmony in the rhythm of your day or your activities that you plan during your lessons, balancing the in and the out is very important. You know, you wouldn't let a child just run all day without resting, or you wouldn't keep them sitting all day without moving because they would get antsy. So it's the same thing of having this in and out breath, in and out breath. So by in breath, we mean something that's more quiet. That's something that's more kind of within them, like maybe painting or drawing, It depends, on reading, depending on what it is. And then, of course, playing outside, music, it could be in or could be out, depending on, what the situation is. Even eating, it depends. If you've got a quiet meal, you could be very in, or if you've got a loud family meal, it could be more of an out breath. And you've probably seen this with your children. Be like, okay, it's time for us to just get up and move. We need to get out and get some energy out. And it works the same in the lessons of planning, circle time, within circle time planning, something that's where they're running around and then they come back, with you and they're clapping or they're doing something while they're paying attention or they're, doing something quiet like a finger play or, acting something out slowly or saying a verse. So it's about experiencing these opposites and polarities to help balance them so they can feel, and it helps you. It's about rhythm really here to kind of balance the in, the out. The whole thing there, kind of balancing. We can certainly talk more about that. Another thing I want to bring up is learning through stories. So Waldorf's lack of textbooks doesn't mean that your child will not get a full, rich dose of literature. And see, I'm amazed at the stories and things that my children have already experienced. Storytelling is like a lost art these days, but it brings life back into teaching, and through this method, it's really amazing. One of the first things that I discovered as I stopped reading directly from a book, not that I haven't, I still read books to my children, in the evening or we're reading chapter books, but during the school and during, these early years, I started storytelling as well, and I was just amazed how I could watch in their eyes, engage their feelings and their reactions to what I was saying. And if I saw they were getting a little sleepy or a little, they don't seem to be very entertained, I could stick something in that story that would kind of wake them up a little bit, or just watch them, as their feelings and their facial movements. As I went through the story, I guess I'd never had experience that before. Reading a book, you're not looking at your child, you're looking at the book and the pictures. And it really brings that part of you into the mix. And that's one of the keys to this Waldorf homeschooling, is that you learn the material and you learn what you need to do, but then you're able to bring yourself into it. And we're going to talk a lot more about that as we go through. So one more thing here I wanted to cover before I wrap this part up is natural toys and materials. So, Waldorf encourages using natural materials and beautiful surroundings like wooden toys and silks, and also things from nature, shells, acorns, walnuts, pine cones, anything else. And it's about the child to get the feel of the real materials. Again, going back to these senses, where they're able to feel real things instead of plastic toys or a loud, noisy toys. Again, as we talked about protecting their senses, with those loud electronic games with the flashing lights and the, noises and all of that stuff. Rather just having them play with some pine cones or acorns and some silks and some little wooden animals or something where they can really feel. And I just love the way these things feel. I love the toys myself. I'm like, these are amazing. I wish I had toys like this when I was a kid. The art and school supplies, too, are also very high quality. And if you've looked into any of them, you have probably seen, because we want to give the best and truest experience to the child. It's about beauty, and it's about, that whole, getting that richness. And you might be like, well, these cost more to buy, and they do. They do cost more up front, but what I can tell you is that the quality and the value of these items are so well worth it. Literally, we have crayons from when the kids were four that we still have the block crayons because they last forever. The paints, you buy one set of paints that last at least a year. Unless you're painting every day, the stuff will last, and it's so well worth it. The wooden toys, my girls are rough on their toys, I will say, and we have glued and fixed so many of them. And if it had been plastic, we just have to throw them away because those plastic toys break. There's no way to fix them. The wooden toys can be fixed, instead of just thrown away. So it's like you're actually saving. And we have stuff from years ago that they still are good. So they really are worth it. You can have less toys and less items but are more high quality. And I think that's the whole thing, simplicity here. And you can just start small with that and work items in as you go. You don't have to have an entire house full of wooden toys. You can just get a few, start replacing some of the other ones if you do have plastic around or some of the other ones that may not be so desirable. You can also make a wish list for birthdays and holidays. And you can check out the resources section here. I have I listed some of my favorite websites to purchase toys and supplies. One of them even, I think, has that wish list where you can just click a bunch of stuff and make a wish list, and your family can go in and purchase right from the website there. So I know that's been an issue at my house. We don't ever know what to get the kids because you won't let them have this or you won't let them have that. Anyway, we're going to talk more about that in one of our other classes about living in pop culture. Okay, so that is sort of a very broad overview there of Waldorf, and just kind of getting into a little bit, just dipping our toes in a little bit, and we'll learn a lot more as we go along. Please ask questions if there's something in particular that you didn't understand or you want me to expand a little bit more about. There's so much here that it just can't all be, you know, it is a process, and I think it's better for you. I want to give it to you in small doses and just absorb, and then we'll go to the next, and then we'll go to the next, rather than just give you a whole huge pile. And you can certainly, like I said, research Waldorf and Rudolf Steiner, and I gave some examples on the resource pages there to really go in and delve into it if you need to get more information. All right, well, I'm going to wrap this first lesson up. And again, if you have questions, please, I hope you do, share, and we'd love to hear from you on the page there, on the webpage. And until next time, I'll talk to you. Bye-bye.